The last verses we read. Although Vritrasura, by his very name, was an asura, or demonic, but actually, because bhakti had manifest within him, that he was the most exalted person. Srila Jiva Goswami used Vritrasura, uses him as an example to show how bhakti can manifest anywhere, and anywhere at once. Bhakti is swatantra, or independent. And when bhakti manifests in the heart of a person, that person is then a devotee, regardless of his situation or position. In the seventh canto, we'll also hear about Prahlad Maharaj, who is born in a most demonic lineage of Hiranyakashipu, such a horrible demonic personality whose very aim of life was to give trouble to those who were pious and destroy, basically speaking, the godly way. But Prahlad was born in that family, a great devotee. So bhakti is swatantra, or independent. The pastime that we're reaching the conclusion of a Vritrasura begins with Indra, who is in the great position of power, a devotee, but in a great position of power. And his position has gone to his head, so to speak. Because the key in having any position, whether it's a position of power or something that others may consider insignificant, the key really in maintaining devotion in that position is to think oneself very, very tiny, very insignificant, and always a servant. If one has that mentality, then regardless of what position he's in, big or small, then his position is very, very secure. His devotion is very secure. But if one lapses from that and thinks oneself the doer, or the one who by his power it's getting done, then one loses the devotional position and is basically on one level left on his own, limited to his own power. So this is really the key. But Indra neglected this principle and he became proud, surrounded by so many people glorifying him, surrounded by dancing girls, having so much opulence, singers, armies at his disposal. Naturally, that tends to go to one's head, because when one snaps one's fingers, so much action takes place. So one thinks, yes, it is the snapping of my fingers that is making it happen. It is me. So when Brihaspati, his spiritual master, walked into the assembly, Indra neglected him. He didn't stand up to show him respect. Brihaspati left, insulted, disappeared. And in that way, by the grace of he who had been maintaining his power, by the grace of his spiritual master, Indra lost his power, lost his position, and became very, very frightened. The demons, the asuras, the ungodly began attacking the kingdom of Indra, and due to his weak position, actually, Indra took shelter on the advice of Lord Brahma of Vishwarupa, a great exalted person who empowered him with the Narayan Karcha, a system to gain the protection fully upon one's person The potency of Lord Narayan himself would be used to protect one. But Indra became angry at Vishwarupa because Vishwarupa had mixed lineage. On one side, on his father's side, his father was Tvastra. So, and Tvastra was a sage or on the demigod side, but his mother was from the Asura side. So when he was performing sacrifices on behalf of Indra, he was secretly offering oblations for the benefit of the demonic elements as well. And when Indra found out about this, he beheaded him, which infuriated Vishwarupa's father, Tvastra, who by his own potency created a gigantic creature whose name was Vritrasura, who he tried to make Vritrasura think of Indra as his enemy, but actually through a subtle mispronunciation of the mantra that created Vritrasura, he made that Vritrasura the enemy of Indra, one whom Indra considered his enemy. And this Vritrasura, as we're soon going to find out, was a great, great devotee. Even though he acted as the enemy of Indra, he was actually a great devotee. And he was incredibly powerful. Incredibly powerful. So much so that on the creation of this Vritrasura, Indra again became terrified. And he approached Lord Narayan himself to come and incarnate. He pleaded with him, hoped that he would come and incarnate to protect himself and the other demigods, because this is the Lord always, he protects the demigods. So Indra went to Lord Narayan and Lord Narayan came, or appeared, I believe, if I remember correctly, it was his voice spoke, and he instructed Indra, saying he wasn't going to incarnate, but he gave him advice how to protect himself from Vritrasura, and that was to ask a great sage named Adichie for his bones. And these bones, the Lord was so powerful, the Lord explained to Indra, that you should use these bones and get Vishwakarma, the great engineer, to construct a weapon for you, the Vajra, or a thunderbolt. And this would have the potency to kill Vritrasura. So see what Indra's position was. He had disrespected his spiritual master, Brihaspati. Killed the one due to his anger. He killed that spiritual master who was giving him the potency to control the demonic forces. And now he was going to have to ask the Dichi. He was going to beg something from him. What was he going to beg? His bones, which means he was begging for his life. And all this occurred so Indra could maintain, on one level, it occurred so Indra could maintain the rulership over the kingdom. So Indra's position was very, very selfish. And when he begged the Dichi for his bones, the Dichi said, everyone's life is the most valuable thing. In fact, you're asking me for this to protect your life and your position, but you're asking me to give my life. Begging my life in charity to protect your life. What are the religious principles that you're following? So after questioning Indra in that way, Indra gave some religious principles. Well, the demigods gave some religious principles, but then the Dichi explained them. A very high level of religion, of proper action. And that level was action for the benefit of others. And this is actually, he explains that without acting for the benefit of others. In other words, by acting just selfishly, our life is useless. And Prabhupada in his purports naturally explains the highest level of unselfish action as the level of selflessly giving oneself in the service of Krishna to help others. Preaching. So the Dichi eventually did give his donate in charity, because people go around asking for some charity. Someone knocks on the door and asks for some charity. Give something for the kidney fund or save the dolphins or something or another. And so yes, they'll be satisfied if you give them $1 or $2. Of course, they get 50% of it. But imagine if people were knocking on the door asking for your bones while you were still alive, not even posthumously. But he gave it through his mystic powers. He left his body, he died by his own power, and gave his life in charity. Or his material life, his spiritual life, he existed. He was so spiritually powerful, he transferred himself upward. But in any case, Indra fashioned this vajra, or powerful thunderbolt. And then, using that thunderbolt, he attacked the armies of the demons headed by Vritrasura. And the demons, they're very powerful persons. They retaliated and they used all their weapons to fight back. But their weapons were useless. And then they became afraid. Because people are very brave when they're more powerful than their enemy. But as soon as they're weak, or weaker than their enemy, all their courage generally disappears too. So the demigods, after fighting bravely, or the demons, after fighting bravely, and then their weapons proving useless, they ran, and the demigods began to fire on them and shoot them from behind. And Vritrasura, he didn't flee the battle. Rather, first he criticized the demons. What is this? You're acting so cowardly, running from the battle in this way? And then he criticized the demigods. What type of warriors are you? These people are afraid, and therefore they're running, they're cowardly, and you're shooting them from behind? Where is your bravery? If you want to show your bravery, you fight with me. And Vritrasura was huge and powerful. He was terrible, terrifying, awesome. You fight with me if you want to show your power and your bravery shooting these people from behind. Now we'll see how brave you are. So Indra immediately picked up his club and threw it at Vritrasura. And with his left hand, Vritrasura caught it. And with that club, he hit Indra's elephant, whose name is Airavata. Sent him back tens of yards. Indra cured him. Brought him, because his... the elephant was knocked back so far and he was bleeding and injured. Indra cured him with his own power. But then it became time for Indra to fight. And when he had seen the power of his club, that it was so difficult to stop, it was so powerful, yet it was completely ineffectual, he became afraid and he was hesitating. So Vritrasura then began to chastise Indra, trying to get him angry, because unless one is angry, one can't fight. So he tried to get him angry, so Indra would continue the fight, telling him, "You're the one who had killed my brother Vishwarupa, and you are standing before me. I dare you to fight with me." And this way he was challenging him, trying to wake up Indra's warrior spirit, overcome Indra's fear. But Indra was getting still more afraid, because Vritrasura was so terrifying. And then Bhishma changed his tactic and said, actually, Indra, you should fight. Don't fear that the Vajra, the thunderbolt weapon given to you on the instructions of Lord Narayan, will be ineffectual. Actually, it will kill me. But who, he said, will actually be more fortunate? Who has God, has Lord Narayan, actually favored? By your killing me, by his grace, you will regain heaven. But I, on the other hand, by being killed by you, will think of his lotus feet, and I will attain his service, his eternal service. So who is he actually favoring? You who will gain heaven, or me who will gain him? So use your weapon. Use your Vajra. It will prove effective, and kill me. It is my desire. But I will fight with you. But you will win. And then he recited those three or four wonderful verses at the end of chapter 11. Where he says, when he calls to the Lord, I'm begging that he will aham haritava padayika mulam dasano daso bhavatasmi bhuya manasmarateshu bhatirgunam ste gvinitava karma karotakam kaya, that all I want is to fix my mind thinking about you. I want to have the service dasano daso of your servants life after life. My body be engaged in your service. May my words glorify your activities. This is devotion. Mama janamani janamani shvare bhavadhad bhakti vahitik. I don't want anything else other than your service. Nanaka preshtam nacha parameshtam. I don't want to go to the heavenly planets and enjoy there. Indra, you want that. This is what most people want, some type of enjoyment. But this is actually contrary to pure devotion, because the pure devotee, again, only values service. His taste is so high, so refined, so pure, that nothing else attracts him. Na yoga siddhir, he doesn't want any yogic powers. He doesn't want cessation of birth and death even. He doesn't want pain relief in any form or fashion. His taste is for the very, very so deeply the remembrance of the Lord and the Lord's service. How incredible is pure devotion. It is unlike anything in this world. Because everyone is motivated to act. And in the world, because without motivation, who will act? So what are people's motivations? It's easy to see the materialistic, the materialism in the world, and see the result of such motivations, and see the dissatisfaction that really comes societally, globally, individually, from selfish motivations. And these type of motivations sit within our hearts too. And when those motivations are removed, anything selfish, anya vilasita sunyam jnana kamara navrita anakulena krishna na shilanam bhakti uttama, when we just consider ourselves Krishna's servant and act for his pleasure, this is called Bhagavad Dharma. This is pure devotional service. And this is what is required to attain the lotus feet of Krishna. So Vritrasura amazed Indra, because there Indra was, the king of demigods, the controller, the lord of the demigods. And this Vritrasura, this Asura, was speaking such high philosophy. He was fearless in the face of death, wanting even to leave this world. And more than that even, he was fixed in the devotional service of the Lord. So now we're up to chapter 12. And this chapter is entitled, in the sixth canto, Vritrasura's Glorious Death. So Vritrasura will die to Indra's Vajra-wielding, thunderbolt-wielding hand. But it will be amazing how that will happen. Because again, he was so powerful. Sukadeva Goswami said, desiring to give up his body, Vritrasura considered death in the battle preferable to victory. O King Parikshit, he vigorously took up his trident and with great force attacked Lord Indra, the King of Heaven, just as Kaitubha had forcibly attacked the Supreme Personality of Godhead when the universe was inundated. This is Prabhupada's short purport. Although Vritrasura repeatedly encouraged Indra to kill him with his thunderbolt, King Indra was morose. First he was morose, fearful, thinking it would be difficult for him to kill Vritrasura, but now he was morose, even still more morose, at having to kill such a great devotee, and he was hesitant to throw it. Vritrasura, disappointed that King Indra was reluctant despite his encouragement, took the initiative very forcibly by throwing his trident at Indra. So he tried, first he tried to challenge Indra verbally to get Indra to fight. Then he began to plead with Indra, saying, I want to leave this world and die, thinking of Krishna, and go to the spiritual world. But now he forcibly attacked Indra, which forced him to fight by throwing his trident. Vritrasura was not at all interested in victory. He was interested in being killed so that he could immediately return home back to Godhead. It's confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 4.9, Takvideham Puna Janmanaiti. After giving up his body by knowing the Lord very intimately, a devotee immediately returns to Lord Krishna and never returns to accept another body. This was Vritrasura's interest. Text 2. Then Vritrasura, the great hero of the demons, whirled his trident, which had points like the flames of the blazing fire at the end of the millennium. With great force and anger, he threw it, his trident, at Indra, roaring and exclaiming loudly, O sinful one, thus shall I kill you. Because Indra had killed his brother, the great Brahmin, powerful priest, Mishrup. Flying in the sky, Vritrasura's trident resembled a brilliant meteor. Although the blazing weapon was difficult to look upon, King Indra, unafraid, cut it to pieces with his thunderbolt. Simultaneously, he cut off one of Vritrasura's arms, which was as thick as the body of Vasuki, the king of the serpents. So he was so powerful. And he cut off Indra with his Vajra weapon. He cut off his arm. Now how could he throw the thunderbolt? How could he throw a trident? How could he attack again? Text 4. Although one of his arms was severed from his body, Vritrasura angrily approached King Indra and struck him on the jaw with an iron mace. He also struck the elephant that carried Indra. Thus Indra dropped the thunderbolt from his hand. The denizens of various planets, like the demigods, demons, charanas, and siddhas, praised Vritrasura's deed. Why? Because, despite the fact that he was so severely wounded, his arm was severed, still he had such a spirit. Such a spirit. But he didn't fall down on the ground. He didn't lament. He simply picked up a mace in his other hand and again attacked Indra and struck him so heavily that Indra's vajra fell. So everyone praised his deed, but when they observed that Indra was in great danger, they lamented, alas, alas, because that vajra was the only thing that could stop Vritrasura from killing Indra. And now it had been knocked from his hand. And Vritrasura still had his mace, and Indra was wounded. Having dropped the thunderbolt from his hand in the presence of his enemy, Indra was practically defeated and was very much ashamed. He dared not pick up his weapon again. Vritrasura, however, encouraged him, saying, "Take up your thunderbolt and kill your enemy," because he was born to be the enemy of Indra. Not that Indra was his enemy, but he was Indra's enemy. "Take up your thunderbolt and kill your enemy. This is not the time to lament your fate." Now, Vritrasura's instructions here from verse 7 to 17 are very interesting and very practical and very relevant, because in our lives there are always times when our weapon will be knocked from our hand. Maybe not our thunderbolt or a sword or something, a weapon in that sense, but our hope. We have plans, we all have plans how we're going to proceed materially, spiritually. And it must happen at times that our plans will be thwarted and will become very, very discouraged. Feeling that we've lost everything, just as Indra felt that he lost everything. With no hope, hopelessness. Now Vritrasura is going to instruct Indra and give him courage. And similarly, if we hear these instructions, it will help us overcome our tendency for discouragement and lamentation, even in the difficult circumstances of life. Vritrasura continued, "O Indra, no one is guaranteed of being always victorious. No one is guaranteed of being always victorious, but the original enjoyer, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, the Lord Krishna. He is the cause of creation, maintenance, and annihilation, and he knows everything. Being dependent and being obliged to accept material bodies, belligerent subordinates, in the material world, we are all belligerent, envious of the Lord. Yet we are subordinate. We don't want to admit our subordination. We are envious of him. So we are belligerent subordinates. The Lord is always successful. Krishna is always successful. But yet, being dependent and being obliged to accept material bodies, belligerent subordinates are sometimes victorious and sometimes defeated. Sometimes success, sometimes failure. Sometimes we try so hard, we get failure. Sometimes we just casually do something and great success comes. It is not within our hands, Vritrasura says. Both must come to us, success and failure, according to our karma. We'll read from Prabhupada's purport. Victory, so there's two basic points. One is victory belongs to the Lord, and the second point is mixed results will always come to us depending upon our karma. So how to deal with the Lord and how to deal with our mixed results. Prabhupada explains, victory is always with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As for the subordinate living entity, they fight under the arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Victory or defeat is not actually theirs. It is an arrangement by the Lord through the agency of material nature. Pride in victory or moroseness in defeat is useless. One should fully depend on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is responsible for the victory and defeat of all living entities. The Lord advises, Niyatam kuru karma tvam karma jayo yakamana. Perform your prescribed duty, for action is better than inaction. The living entity is ordered to act according to his position. We have duties, we should perform our duties. Victory or defeat depends on the Supreme Lord. Karma eva dikareste ma phaleshu kadachana. Both these verses are from Bhagavad Gita. You have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but you are not entitled to the fruits of actions. One must act sincerely according to his position. Victory or defeat depends on the Lord. When we say, or Prabhupada says, that victory or defeat depends on the Lord, this means ultimately, it does not rest in our hands. Our karma ultimately is also in the hands of Krishna. But yet, generally, our karma comes to us. Krishna, if he so desires, can adjust that, but generally our karma will come to us. So our victory or defeat, again, doesn't depend upon our own personal strength, our great desire, our determination, our great power of intelligence or cunning or cleverness. Ultimately, it depends on our karma, which is given to us ultimately by Krishna. So we should never become proud in victory, in success. And similarly, why become morose in defeat? One must act sincerely, this is the instruction that Prabhupada is giving, according to his position. Victory or defeat depends on the Lord. Vitrasura encourages Indra, saying, don't be morose because of my victory. There is no need to stop fighting. Instead, you should go on with your duty. When Krishna desires, you will certainly be victorious. This verse is very instructive for sincere workers in the Krishna consciousness movement. We should not be jubilant in victory or morose in defeat. If we become jubilant in victory, then we will become morose in defeat. And if we are too attached to the results, rather, one should be attached to the attempt of the sincere attempt of pleasing Guru and Krishna. Very, very difficult in this world because we have so much passion in us and so much ignorance. Passion makes us attached to the results of our work. Passion forces us that attachment. And passion forces us to think it's me who's doing it. Kartaham iti manyate. That I am the one who's doing it. It's my power that makes the success. But then, if we want to taste that sweet, we must have to taste also the bitterness of defeat. So depend on Krishna, do one's duty. This is the instruction. Sincerely act. And Vishnusura is basically saying, don't worry, you're going to be successful. You'll kill me. We should make a sincere effort to implement the will of Krishna or Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we should not be concerned with victory and defeat. Our only duty is to work sincerely so that our activities may be recognized by Krishna. So That's really the essence of our duty. Sincerity. And that is more of an essential value to supply to Krishna. Unmotivated actions in sincerity, wishing to please Krishna, Mahaprabhu, Prabhupada. Bhishishwar continues. We are all dependent, he's saying. Don't think that it all depends on you. All living beings in all the planets of this universe, including the presiding deities of all the planets, are fully under the control of the Lord. They work like birds caught in a net who cannot move independently. Is this how we usually view ourselves? That we are working and acting like birds caught in a net? Basically, we have no freedom. Prabhupada's purport. The difference between the suras and the asuras is that the suras know that nothing can happen without the desire of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whereas the asuras cannot understand the supreme will of the Lord. In this fight, Vrishasura is actually the sura, the demigod, while Indra is the asura, the demon. No one can act independently. Rather, everyone acts under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, victory and defeat come according to the results of one's karma. And the judgment is given by the Supreme Lord. Karmana dhaivanetrena. Since we act under the control of the Supreme according to our karma, no one is independent from Brahma down to the insignificant ant. Whether we are defeated or victorious, the Supreme Lord is always victorious because everyone acts under His direction. Vrishasura continues. Our sensory prowess, because what gives us our power to be victorious? Our sensory prowess, our mental power, our bodily strength, our living force, immortality and mortality are all subject to the superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not knowing this, foolish people think the dull material body to be the cause of their activities. O King Indra, as a wooden doll that looks like a woman, or as an animal made of grass and leaves, cannot move or dance independently, but depends fully on the person who handles it, all of us dance according to the desires of the Supreme Controller, the Personality of Godhead. No one is independent. Prabhupada's purport explains, we are all servants of Krishna. We have no independence. We are dancing according to the desire of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but out of ignorance and illusion, we think we are independent of the Supreme Will. Text 11. The three Purushas, Karanadakshay Vishnu, Gavadakshay Vishnu, and Chiradakshay Vishnu, the material nature, the total material energy, the false ego, the five material elements, the material senses, the mind, the intelligence, and consciousness, cannot create the material manifestation without the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he's explaining how you are under the control of the Lord, but not only you, He is the Supreme Lord, that the entire material existence is under His control. Everything depends on Him. Therefore, our pride, thinking that we're the doer, is our foolishness only. A foolish, senseless person cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although always dependent, he falsely thinks himself the Supreme. If one thinks, according to my previous fruit of actions, one's material body is created by the father and mother, and the same body is annihilated by another agent, as another animal is devoured by a tiger, this is not a proper understanding. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself creates and devours the living beings through other living beings. It's actually very wonderful. This is the vision of a devotee. In the first canto of the Bhagavatam, when Prickett Maharaj sees a sudra, a low-class person, beating a cow or a bull, and he asks the bull, "Who has done this to you?" The bull says, "No one has done this. This is, if I identify the person who has done it, I'm also guilty. This is just karma. This is just what happens." And Prabhupada explains in the purport the devotee's vision that this isn't actually correct. Because even though it's true that if you think that the person has done it to you and then retaliate, or you feel the pain as if it's caused by another person, if we adopt a victim mentality, we're missing the point. And we become entangled in reactions, and then we'll have to get back to that person. We'll have to retaliate in a future life. We become entangled. So we become guilty too. So on one level that's true, but Prabhupada's purport says, no, ultimately one has to identify the doer of everything as Krishna. Any other understanding is incomplete, because Krishna is the Anumanta. Upadrasta Anumanta cha bharta bhokta maheshvara paramatmati chapyukta deyesvin purushapara, that he permits everything. So ultimately, it is he who is sanctioning everything. So this is not the proper understanding. And the devotee sees in this way, actually, this is advanced devotion, but he sees that this is Krishna. And therefore, because he's a devotee, he sees there's mercy from Krishna that's coming, regardless of how unfavorable or favorable the circumstance may seem. So this is not proper understanding that I'm being devoured by a tiger. The Supreme Personality of Godhead himself creates and devours the living beings through other living beings. Prabhupada's purport to this. According to the conclusion of the philosophy known as Karma Mamangsa, one's karma or previous fruit of activities is the cause of everything, and therefore there is no need to work. Those who arrive at this conclusion are foolish. When a father creates a child, he does not do so independently. He is induced to do so by the Supreme Lord. As the Lord himself says in the Bhagavad Gita, Savasya cham riddhi sanavisto matya smitam jnanam aponam cha. I am in everyone's heart, and for me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Unless one receives dictation from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who sits within everyone's heart, one cannot be induced to create anything. Therefore, the father and mother are not the creators of the living entity. According to the living entity's karma, fruit of activities, he is put into the semen of the father, who injects the living entity into the womb of the mother. Then according to the body of the mother and father, yata yoni yata bijam, the living entity accepts a body and takes birth to suffer or enjoy. Therefore, the Supreme Lord is the original cause of one's birth. Similarly, the Supreme Lord is the cause of one's being killed. No one is independent. Everyone is dependent. This true conclusion is that the only independent person is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Are there any questions at this point or comments? It's such an attractive philosophical point, but so very difficult. When something happens to us that we don't like, it's so difficult to actually be on this platform. And therefore, I've read in the second canto where Prabhupada says, this tatayanu kampam susamikshamanu bhunjane vapma kripavabhakam ridvagvipapodam vitanam namaste jivatiyo muktipade sadayavak. This, Prabhupada says, is actually to actually live on this platform is the secret of Krishna consciousness, of being Krishna conscious. Of seeing Krishna's mercy in everything. Seeing Krishna's hand in everything. But so difficult to live on that platform, actually. Why? Because of attachments and repulsions. Icha dvesha samutena dvandva mohena bharata. And these cause our illusion, our continually staying in the material world. Krishna is there, we have our karma. Krishna inspires us to act in a particular way, inspires the tiger to eat us, he inspires the thief to steal, he inspires the householder to put up the bars and the alarms. This is all the inspiration of Krishna based, however, on the desires of the living entity, the desires and what they deserve. That doesn't mean, though, that it's actually Krishna's desire that tigers devour humans and thieves steal, or that people become inspired to become extremely wealthy. That's not Krishna's desire, actually. It's Krishna reciprocating with the living entity's desire. His desire is that we become fully immersed in his service. Sarvadamam pratyaja mamikam saranam braja, with great loving devotion. That is his desire, and that is actually for the benefit of the living entity as well. Yeah.
These weapons we have in Krishna consciousness.
The weapons we have in Krishna consciousness? What weapons do you have?
Well, as we were discussing, you have different weapons.
What do you mean?
I thought just to use them as a way to advance spiritually.
What weapons do you mean? I'm just trying to figure out if you mean...
Swords, maybe? Not
swords and spears and stuff like that.
But if they're taken away from us, I think you were talking.
What weapons do you mean?
No, I was just wondering for clarification. I'm not sure if I heard
that. I'm not sure. I spoke right. What did I say?
You said when he dropped the...
Indra dropped his vajra, his weapon.
So similarly, in material life, when we drop something, our weapon, like something that we have... Obviously, we don't...
What I meant is we fail. He didn't just drop it. It was knocked from him. So, in our life, failures come. Unavoidably, failure comes as happinesses and successes come. According to a karma, one person may get a seemingly more success and less failures than another person, but ultimately, success and failure come to differing degrees to everyone. How to view the failures, and that gives us the key also to view the successes. If we view the failures as this is Krishna ultimately, there may be an element of my karma in it too, but what is Krishna trying to teach me through this? How he's crushing my pride, making me dependent. Harisha Sattadanam Svanai. Krishna even says that when he's really pleased with someone, he takes everything away and makes them completely dependent. Is that what we desire? I doubt it. It's a frightening, terrifying thing, but that's what death is going to be like. We won't have anything, even our body, even our mental intelligence, whatever we have, whatever we depend on in this world. And we all have our different skills, our different tricks, our different things that we use to Some people use their sense of humor to protect them. Some people use their physical strength. Some people use their money. Some people use their intelligence to get themselves out of a predicament. Some people use their influence. But all these, ultimately, are insufficient. They're infallible. They're fallible soldiers. They're not going to protect us sufficiently at the time of death. Just like we're used to our body recovering. You know, we cut ourselves or something and we just take it for granted, put a little band-aid on it as if the band-aid is making it heal. We're used to the body recovering, so we gain confidence in the body itself. But there's one time the body's going to go down, we get a cold, and we get a serious cold, and yet it recovers, and we go, didn't like that, but it recovered. But one time, it's not going to recover. Are we going to be ready to faithfully depend on Krishna at that time? Well, we should practice now. Seeing Krishna's hand in everything. And look at Vritrasura. Not only was he not afraid of death, he was saying, this is much better than staying in the material world. I'm going. Not that this is an atypical example, not atypical example, but an atypical example. But such the power of realization as such, and we saw it also in the Didhimuni. He was fearless in death. And Vritrasura, fearless in death. Because their realization was so deep that they were able to so tightly hold on to the lotus feet of Krishna. So they're our great heroes. We aspire to have realizations of that depth. So when we're in a situation of defeat, at least we'll be able to say, Krishna is making me practice dealing with failure, because at the time of death, everything is going to fail. So at least we can see Krishna's mercy in that way. We may have to learn other things, but at least we can see that. It's not a very pleasurable one, but we can watch ourselves and notice how we deal with it. How many times a day do I fail in these things? Many, 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 uncountably many. Any other questions or comments? Okay, tomorrow, if Krishna allows, we'll continue. So, Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Vritrasura ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai.